Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Hot Grease on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Nicole Taylor. Today, we'll be talking Slow Food NYC, Joe Doe, and the Laurel 1891. But first up, food headlines. Man, there was so much buzz going on the interwebs in terms of food. I like to retweet a lot of articles and what people are talking about, so some of my favorite things last week that happened. There was so much news last week about women chefs. I saw like two or three blog posts. I know that Southern Foodway Alliance is dedicated this entire year to women and chefs in the South. And a great summer symposium is happening in Richmond, Virginia. That's going to focus on that. But ever since I heard that theme come out the end of this year, I've seen like a million things. I know that the owner of Dirt Candy did a post on her own blog about women in the kitchen. So, yeah, what do you think about this? Some people say that women are not getting their just due in terms of being celebrated, awarded, and talked about. I have to agree. I would love to see more women on the front of magazines or in articles when they release the best of and all that good stuff. So yeah, I saw that a lot last week. What else happened last week? Well, I have to say shout out and thank you to all the people. My birthday actually was on Saturday, and I got a lot of social media birthday messages, and thanks so much. This is my time of year. I spent yesterday celebrating my birthday in one of my favorite neighborhoods in the city, which is Red Hook. I call it Rise Up. Every time I'm in Red Hook now, I put a hashtag that says Rise Up Red Hook. Shout out to my all-time favorite brunch spot. I hate to tell people this is my favorite brunch spot because I'm like, will someone discover it? And that's Homemade on Van Brunt in Brooklyn. I love them. I went there for brunch yesterday. So shout out to them. There you go. Those women right there that are doing great food work. So yeah, guys, food headlines. If you have something that you want me to talk about in food headlines, or you want to join me for the first 5 or 10 minutes on the show, give us a buzz. Shoot me an email. You can find me at Nicole, N-I-C-O-L-E, at foodcultures.com, or feel free to hit me up on Twitter. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and talk Slow Food NYC. Keep listening to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network.
Tonight, I just want to hold you.
You're listening to Let It Go by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Looking for no fight. Just let it go now.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back. In the studio today to talk Slow Food NYC is chairman of the New York chapter, Mr. Anthony Facio. Anthony.
Hey, what's up, Nicole? How are
you? Welcome to Hot Grease.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
Belated. Thank you. Yeah, I guess I was still, 35 years ago, I was still in the hospital. You know, people stay in the hospital, seven days.
Right.
Thank you. But thank you for coming to the studio. Such
Absolutely.
A gorgeous day. It's kind of hot in here, but it's gorgeous outside,
right? Gorgeous. So worth it.
So, Slow Food NYC chapters. I just want to hear an overview because I think a lot of people don't realize that every Slow Food chapter has a different DNA and is doing different work all over the city. Tell me about the New York chapter.
Sure. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Each local chapter is run by a group of volunteer board members. And depending on kind of the neighborhood or the board members and their passions, each chapter will be a little bit different. So Slow Food NYC covers all five boroughs in New York. And our main programs are Urban Harvest, which are school gardens. Right now, we support and help run 15 gardens in the Bronx, Lower East Side, and Brooklyn.
Oh, 15? Really? 15, yeah. Oh, wow. I thought it was just like one or two.
No. Yeah, it used to be about 10 or so. And this past year, we really grew it to 15. That coupled with our summer program, which is a farm and garden that we run out in Brownsville, Brooklyn, is a great opportunity for the local neighborhood and community to come out and learn how to play with dirt, how to grow things, and what does a fresh vegetable and a fresh produce, fresh eggs taste like.
I think we should back up. I mean, for some people who are listening, they're like, Slow Food, I never heard of that. We need to explain like the mission and the history of Slow Food.
Totally. Slow Food started in 1986 in northern Italy. It was a response to McDonald's coming into Rome. And Carlo Petrini, the founder, said, hold up here. There's a disconnect that's going to happen with this. And we need to sort of, the antithesis of fast food, create a slow food type mentality. Ultimately, what that means is supporting food that is good, clean, and fair. Having a connection back to the farmer, the grower, the producer of the food, and understanding who's growing it, what it takes to grow it, and what real wholesome food tastes like.
So how many people are a part of, because I think I heard a few years ago, that the New York chapter had the largest slow food chapter in the country. Is that true?
It is. It's the largest and it's the most active and robust.
Oh, really?
So we've got what now, about almost 2,300 Twitter followers. We're really pushing for 10,000 this year, which I think is going to be easy. We have a newsletter that goes out to about the same number of folks. But internationally, there's 132 chapters. There's over 100,000 people that are official members. And New York City has been going strong for many, many years. One of our second program that's kind of known for New York City because it was developed here about 8 years ago is Snell of Approval. That's a program that kind of acknowledges establishments, restaurants, markets, and bars in the five boroughs that do an awesome job of procuring their ingredients in a slow food way.
I will say when I first moved to New York City 5 years ago, one of the first happy hours I attended was a slow food happy hour.
Cool, yeah. Slur. We call them slurs.
Exactly. It was down in Zumbo at Superfine.
Totally.
And I think that's a really cool way if someone is entering a city and really want to immediately connect to people who are doing food work. How often do you guys do the slur, the happy hours?
We do those monthly. And you're right. They're very casual for a couple hours at a local bar. Come in for a happy hour special, be it a drink or an appetizer. And board members and other strong volunteers are always present to kind of chit-chat about what Slow Food NYC is doing.
So you know what? I have to ask you this. I never see y'all. Do y'all get it to go to Staten Island?
You know, that's a great point. One thing that this board this year is really focusing on is making sure that we are hitting all five boroughs. Staten Island, yes, we need to do a better job.
And the
we
Bronx know that. And Queens.
And the Bronx, yeah, we run a couple schools in the Bronx,
cool.
We're working with the local neighborhood, and likewise in Queens. In fact, our slur this month is going to be in Queens.
Okay,
at Alewife.
Oh, cool! I'll have to check it out. What neighborhood is it?
Long Island City.
Okay, cool. I want to get back to Snell of Approval. Because I think this is one great program that's really an easy way if someone wants to like really make a difference in terms of supporting small businesses and farms. The Snail of Approval is a program. I think it's like an easy entry into like being a activist.
Yes, yes.
Tell me more about the Snail of Approval. And I feel like, wasn't it a book or something, or a booklet, or how do you find out about?
If you go to our website, slowfoodnyc.org, in the top right, there's a graphic in the banner that says Snail of Approval. And once you click into that, you see a map of all the Snail of Approval establishments, and then there's a list and there's profiles on each place. But it's a process where an establishment needs to get nominated by anybody.
Oh, really?
Once they're nominated, they go to the Snail of Approval Committee for an official vet.
Okay.
And that vetting process is chatting with the chef or who's ever doing most of the buying to see where they're getting their ingredients from. Are they seasonal? Are they respective to locality? And also, you know, what the general nature of the relationship with the establishment is with the farmer. And once we've done that, then we'll step back and we'll call the farmer. We'll call the grower and say, hey, you know, restaurant so-and-so.
Oh, y'all are taking it that far?
Absolutely, because, okay, you know, that having that relationship with the grower and the producer is very important. It's important to Slow Food, and it certainly is at the foundation of Snail of Approval.
So how many restaurants were established? Because it's beyond restaurants. At first, I always thought, you know, only Snail of Approval was for restaurants. But there are a few producers, and
there's bars, there's markets, yeah. Now there's a little bit over 115.
Oh, wow.
And you think, wow, 115, that's a lot. But then you think, hold up, this is New York City. How many establishments could be a Snail of Approval?
Thousands.
And, yeah, it's a thousands because they haven't been nominated, or maybe they're not really up to Snail of Approval standards.
So let me ask you this. So once a establishment has the Snail of Approval, is there a process where they have to re-up, or what's that? So once they're in this club, what happens?
Yeah, we say that we revet every 2 years. And I'll be honest, we haven't been right on top of that, but that is the intention. And this year, we're going to be going through a whole bunch of revets to sort of true up that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I've seen the list. I would say it's pretty true.
If you're familiar with the establishments and the program, yeah, we try to keep integrity there.
Yeah, I would definitely say without a doubt there's definitely integrity. I'm glad we're going to take a short break, but I'm glad that we have one of the Snail of Approval folks, the people behind Joe Doe and Joe Doe. So listeners, we're going to take a short break and come back with more Slow Food NYC Snail of Approval. Keep listening.
You're listening to Same Old, Same Old by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today.
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. I'm so excited to have Joe Tobias in the studio. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks for having me.
It's so funny. I was really excited because I keep hearing and seeing everything about you. I think it's the sandwich thing. Everyone is talking about sandwiches nowadays.
Yeah, I think that right now, because of obvious economic woes, sandwiches, pizza, everything that's good and homey is the way to go. And we struck a chord with a good little sandwich shop in the East Village.
So you have two Snail of Approval restaurants in the East Village. You have Joe Doe with D-O-E.
Yep.
And then you have Joe Doe.
D-O-U-G-H.
And then we can say sandwich on that one.
Yep.
So tell me about, let's first start with Joe Doe, the sandwich spot.
Well, that's a year and a half old. traditional mom and pop style business. Me and my business partner and girlfriend for, you know, should be wife, but girlfriend for 8 years now. The restaurants got in the way of the marriage. Sorry, but we have a great focus on just having individual relationships with farmers and things like that, but not making it about a lot of smoke and mirrors or about how great are we for doing this. We just feel like we have the opportunity as a really small place to have a farmer who's even smaller than most people could even talk wow. about. Because, you know, if you need 26 hanger steaks for the night, you're probably not going to work with the people I work with, you know. Right. I kind of can work through one animal at a time with one purveyor who sells me all their meat. So I have an even more unique and even more slow relationship, I think, with a lot of the New York producers. And
what are some of your favorite producers that you get stuff from?
I mean, right now, Paget Farms. We do a lot of Washington County people.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Washington County being so far, and New York people don't realize that when we're in New York City, you could drive 5 hours and still be in New York. It's a large state. So there are a lot of people
that
get forgotten.
Is that Pennsylvania or upstate New York?
That's almost near Vermont.
Oh, okay,
so
cool.
That's upstate New York. And I think that a lot of people think automatically about Hudson Valley, which is beautiful, but gets a lot of the play. And I think that there are producers in the old dairy becoming new dairy areas that are really just going over the top, you know, Batten Kills and people like that. And, you know, John Abaldo doing very small sort of English style pork in upstate New York, and Trapani, who's doing stuff out of New Jersey and New York. So I think there's just like a lot of people who are super passionate about what they do, and also looking at the dynamic that we have right now, which Anthony and I talked about, how do we include more people in this and
right.
let it be a less elitist thing and have Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens have the same sort of play as Manhattan and the same sort of pricing?
Because a sandwich shop in like the South Bronx would be the bomb, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, $8, $10, $12 for a sandwich, if the sandwich is good and big, you know, people are cool with that. And particularly if they know the story and it has a person behind that.
Right.
I feel like I'm hopeful that people like you are going to eventually go to these neighborhoods that really, really need like low entry sandwich shop, just good comfort stuff.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So tell me about, I know you have the sandwich spot. What's the difference between the sandwich spot and your sit down restaurant?
The sit-down restaurant, I think, is a completely different animal. It by all honest opinions, only targets one area of people who are wealthy, people who can afford.
Well, you got to pay the bills.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it is Manhattan. It's not, you know, it's not Brooklyn.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, and I'm sure you feel this way, you know, for farmers and really all of the restaurants, the over 100 restaurants that are on the Snell of Approval list for Slow Food NYC, it takes a lot of work to be able to work with small producers mm-hmm. and to get your numbers right and your covers right. So, I mean, I applaud all folks who are really, really making this a priority, because you could go the cheap way. I mean, you really could, and make even more money.
We were just talking about yesterday about, I mean, the revetting process one, but we were also talking about how we really were interested in how could people justify, you know, the $100 shoes but not the $10 burger. That's sort of the real catch-22 of the whole slow food movement, is that to incorporate everybody, I think on some level we need to lose a lot of the preachiness of some things.
Totally.
And kind of get back to the idea that food shouldn't be cheap. Because once you start thinking of how many can I get for $5 or that kind of theory of food, we're not going to have the same sort of arguments ever.
And when you have
one,
I mean,
group and another group,
I have that same the exact same conversation about the $100 shoes and the you know dollar burger. I mean, I think when you go to some neighborhoods and that's what's shoved down your throat mm-hmm. is the dollar burger and the $100 shoes. Who's going to go to the East Village every day and get a sandwich?
Right.
So, yes, there has to be a complete change in the thought and the way that we do business and all that good stuff. So I have to ask you, moving kind of in another direction, I think I saw that you – did you win something at, like, Choice Eats or something recently? Did you win something for the sandwich? So. I could have swore I saw you. So let me ask you, does it matter to have these stamps of approvals and awards and to be on these lists for best sandwich and all that stuff? Does it really matter? And what are the benefits?
That's a super loaded question for a guy like
that's
me.
That's a big question.
Do they matter to the average person who doesn't really know about the side of food we're speaking of? Yes, it means everything. However, is it a great sort of 1 to 10 of who's actually doing those things, whatever they may be, best pizza, best burgers, or best local food, or best whatever, haircuts, whatever it is? There's a lot of stuff, a lot of politics, a lot of money attached to these things now that I think that, you know, in a utopian style way, I still feel as a small business owner that I can present the most true form of that reality, of that small business, of that small farm, without having to sell it as a product or make a really super ROI for some bonehead who's coming in the suit and telling me that I need to serve burgers because they're a great markup. I mean, I think we have a really individual approach, and I think that that's what is catching on more than anything is a little bit less about the I know this and you don't, and look at how great my smoker is on my, top of my Gramercy apartment. And I mean, it's a little less about that now. It's a little bit more about, like, can you do something in a garbage barrel in the middle of Bushwick? You know, and like,
right.
Yeah, you can, you know, and a lot of people are doing some really super stuff without a lot of the BS that goes along with, you know, the local and the slow. And, you know, we were talking about farmers markets. Why can I go to Union Square and get this breadth and depth, but I can go up to Washington Heights and get, like, a guy selling apples and onions?
Yeah.
You know, and not really doing it with any sort of fervor. You know, so I think there's a gross misrepresentation in the process at the moment, but I think that slow foods and people like that are really doing their damnedest to sort of keep evolving and keep seeing a new approach and keep seeing a new audience and keep seeing a new generation of people who maybe just care about some decent food and are willing to pay for it and will have less money in their pocket but have a lot better future. No diabetes, no obesity. I mean, but these can't all come from bans. They can't come from, you know, forcibly removing things. You know, we need to talk about, you know, we were talking about, you know, if McDonald's is the biggest producer and consumer of tomatoes or chicken or beef, why is vilifying McDonald's going to help slow food? It's gonna hurt it, you know, in the end, because you can't fight the demon. You have to sort of try to create a process now where maybe they demand organic tomatoes from their farmers. What's going to happen to the amount of tomatoes that are grown organically is going to go through the roof.
I totally agree. We need to continue the conversation. I think slow food for so long has really been in the mix of continue the conversation, having different voices at the table, voices that may not always have the same, you know, saying the same thing, but it's good to have different voices and different opinions. I think we're in this point in this food movement now that people are stopping all the talking and really saying, what's the action piece? Right. What's the action piece? So I applaud, you know, your philosophy and what you're doing.
Thank you.
I want to talk more because we're running out of time about what's coming up with Slow Food NYC in terms of their fundraiser and how this fundraiser helps to build your program, such as the Snell of Approval program.
Yeah, our annual fundraiser is coming up on this Thursday, April 11th at 6 p.m. at the Invisible Dog Gallery here in Brooklyn. There are some tickets still available, so if you go to our website at slowfoodnyc.org, you'll see it right front and center. So I'd love for everyone to come out and support us and support our programs. As an all-volunteer-run organization, we're also self-funded, and so this fundraiser in particular is very important to the immediate future of Slow Food NYC. And all the proceeds go to support our school gardens we talk about, but they also go to support other types of programs and events that we run throughout the year. Certainly Snell of Approval and its new sort of baby program, Producer Matrix, which is a group of over 130 farms and fisheries, distributors and warehousers to help restaurants like Jodo continue to source the ingredients that are being grown in our region in a slow manner.
And I think I have to say this. I think a lot of people think that the local or the slow food chapters get this funnel of money from Slow Food International. Right. I think we need to be clear. When you actually are involved in your local slow food chapter, like Slow Food NYC, the money is going directly to the program.
Exactly. Your chapter. And we don't get any money from Slow Food International, and we essentially don't get any money from Slow Food USA either. So our budget, which is an aggressive one for Slow Food USA, which you sort of alluded to earlier about the size and activity of our chapter, it is aggressive, but that also means that the funds need to be there to support it and support these programs, which are awesome and have already impacted the food industry and the food supply chain of New York City.
So, Joe Doe, Anthony, thank you for coming on Hot Grease.
Thank you,
Nicole. I appreciate it. So, Joe, you have to tell people how they can find you on the interwebs.
Well, we were at chefjodo.com. You can hit off both places from that jump-off page. And the East Village is our home, First Avenue for the shop, and St. Mark's. And we have First Street between First and Second Avenue for Jodo, going on our five-year anniversary over there. So we do brunch, we do a crazy dinner, and the shop is sort of just the kicker for all day long kind of eating.
Cool. And Anthony, Slow Food NYC, right?
Slowfoodnyc.org.
There you go. Listeners, we're going to take a break and come back with Type and Tell, the adult version, the adult food version of Show and Tell. Keep listening.
Please don't give none away. Let it get sweeter by the day. Oh, won't you save it, baby? Won't you save it?
You're listening to Pumpkin Pie by the California Honey Drops on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Save all your cherry jam. Oh, won't you save all your cherry jam? Oh, won't you save all your cherry jam just for me, girl? Please don't give none away. Let it get sweeter by the day. Oh, won't you save it, baby? Won't you save it? Oh, won't you save it all for me?
Welcome back to Hot Grease on Heritage Radio Network. Let me give a Southern Girl's hug to Roberta's Restaurant, located at 261 Moore Street in Brooklyn, New York. And a shout out to my engineer today, Joe G. Thanks so much, Joe. You know how we do it here on Hot Grease. Type and Tell. Type and Tell is the adult version of Show and Tell. Remember that in grade school? It's where we shout out something great that's happening in the food world. And on the phone today to talk, the Laurel 1891 Kickstarter is Ramin Gersharam. Ramin, welcome back to Hot Grease.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you.
I am so excited because I think this project is so fabulous, and I love a good Kickstarter or great Indiegogo. Tell listeners what exactly the Laurel 1891 is.
Definitely, no problem. So Laurel is an oyster boat, a wooden oyster boat that was built in New York City, actually in the Tottenville section of Staten Island in 1891. And she was a flagship of what was at the time the largest oyster industry in the world, which was in the Long Island Sound, centered mostly around Connecticut. And the boat was built for an oyster company that did business out of South Norwalk, Connecticut. And in fact, she is, because she's thankfully still around, one of the boats responsible for bringing what later became the very famous Blue Point oyster over to Long Island. Yep, to be farmed for seed, because Long Island, that side of Long Island didn't actually have oysters, and they were brought by seed, as seed over by boats like Laurel. And so, you know, Laurel is basically 122 years old. She's the largest remaining wooden oyster boat in the original fleet, and she's in terrible danger of being cut up, crushed, destroyed, because virtually her days working as an oyster boat are over. And so my husband and I are trying to save this boat, which is seaworthy. She runs. She's you know, capable of going port to port. By restoring her and turning her into a mobile oyster bar that will travel around ports around the Long Island Sound, the Connecticut side, the Long Island side, and down to New York City, including, you know, the Brooklyn and Queens part of the Long Island, as an oyster bar. So we've done a Kickstarter campaign to try to, you know, get her to her first phase of restoration.
Wow. So I'm assuming there are multiple phases to this project. So phase one, you're raising about $60,000 for phase one. What will that cover?
Right. So what that will do is actually take care of what is the most crucial part of this restoration, which is that her decks have to be restored because they're old. They're 122 years old. And interestingly enough, they were made with scrap mahogany from sailing yachts of robber barons. The boatyard where she was built built a lot of these, you know, very large pleasure boats for the robber barons of the day, the Vanderbilts, the Astors, and so on. And there was this leftover mahogany that was used for her decks. The issue is that as beautiful as that was, and she is a very beautiful boat, not really, you know, kind of the best wood for a deck, which gets a lot of hard labor. You know, if you can imagine thousands of pounds of oysters being dumped on this deck. So the deck is leaking, and it really needs to be replaced because that leaking means that the beams underneath the deck are starting to wear away and rot. And if that happens, essentially the boat will be lost.
So after folks remain, they go on and they, because this to me, it's one of the most brilliant and very fascinating projects and that I've seen on Kickstarter. So after folks go and they donate their money, because I know that they're going to do this after hearing this, what are some of the rewards people can get?
There's there's a varying level of awards, which are pretty cool. So among them is that you can come on the Laurel and have, you know, some oysters and raw bar oysters and a drink. And, you know, and that goes up to various levels, you know, the amount that you can have based on what the donation is. But some of the cooler gifts are that from this deck wood, we are going to create picture frames.
Mm.
So of her original deck. But the one that I think is really cool is an oyster knife. So we're going to have create oyster knives, shucking knives, with the handle is wood from the deck of the Laurel, all the way up to, if anyone's a big spender, they can have the original beam from the boat that has her Coast Guard registration number carved into it, which is what they used to do in wooden boats. That's quite a large donation. What's cool about that is that the Laurel is the longest continuously registered fishing vessel in America.
Wow.
So that number is pretty special. So, and it can be all the various levels of award can be seen on the Kickstarter page. I think the ones of the deck, made from the deck beams, and the deck beams themselves are the neatest ones.
I love it. I've already tweeted out a few times, and even today I tweeted out the link to Kickstarter. But what is the easiest way for folks who wanted to follow you and your progress on this Kickstarter campaign and go straight to the page? How can they find it?
Well, I think the easiest way to do that, there's a couple of ways. The boat has her own Twitter handle, which is @Laurel1891. And the website for Kickstarter is on there. Of course, I'm at my name, Ramin Ganeshram, and the boat website is on there. But a really easy way to get to the Kickstarter page is to go to tinyurl.com/Laurel1891.
Perfect. Good luck to you. I'm really excited about this. I'm going to do my best to continue to type and tell so you can get out. Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much, and glad to have you on the show again. Well, anytime you need to come back, you know you're always welcome.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. I always love to chat with you, Nicole. Thank you again.
Good luck to you.
Thanks.
Listeners, thanks so much for tuning in live or listening to the podcast. Remember, I'm here on heritageradionetwork.org every Monday at 3:30 Eastern Time. Until then, always take the road less traveled.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.